And good morning and welcome to the Prescott Daily Courier. I'm Terry Ward, and today reading from dcourier.com, articles dated from Wednesday of this week, that was yesterday, which was December the 18th. And coming up with this half hour, Prescott Valley looking at a new YMCA, the next steps for a new Y at its upcoming meeting. Also, event promoters and hotels and lodging sites soon will have to disclose extra fees up front. And a local music festival that sought financial help from the city of Prescott earlier this year will receive considerably less than the original ask for their operation. Those stories coming up this half hour, we'll start with a State Department of Child Safety found in violation of federal law. That's according to the Federal Department of Justice. The story says the Arizona Department of Child Safety, this is formerly Child Protective Services, violating federal law by discriminating against both parents and children with disabilities, according to the Department of Justice. In findings released earlier this week, the DOJ said the state agency does not communicate effectively with parents and children with hearing disabilities, including the failure to provide interpreters. The Justice Department also concluded the state had failed to reasonably accommodate the needs of parents with disabilities in several ways, including not providing information in a simplified form. And the federal report also said that the state agency denies parents with disabilities an equal chance to participate in and benefit from programs and services. All that, the Justice Department concludes, violates the Americans with Disabilities Act. Under the ADA, parents and children with disabilities are entitled to fair and equal treatment by child welfare agencies. That's according to Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division. What makes all that important is that it is DCS, that is the Department of Child Services. What makes it all that important is that it is DCS that gets involved with families in cases of abuse and neglect. It is that agency that decides when to remove a child from a home, at least temporarily, if not forever, and what steps that parents need to take to be reunited with their children. The Civil Rights Division is committed to ensuring that unlawful discrimination does not interfere with a parent's opportunity to stay with or be reunited with their child, and that separations are not prolonged because a child welfare agency doesn't give parents the effective communication and reasonable accommodations that the ADA guarantees. That is, again, according to a statement from the Federal Department of Justice. The federal government has sent a 13-page letter to DCS Director David Lujan detailing in depth its findings and exactly why the Department of Justice believes the agency is violating the law. More to the point, it contains a list of things that it says DCS must do at a minimum to come into compliance with federal law. Most significant, it requires the agency to develop and implement changes in policies and procedures to ensure not only that parents with disabilities have equal access to programs and services, and that they do not lead to discrimination. That, according to DOJ, must include changes in DCS assessments, case plans, psychological evaluations, service plans, and reunification programs and services. The Department of Justice also wants both DCS workers and the private contractors with whom it works to undergo training and compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. That includes how to consistently document the disabilities of both parents and children, and how to provide appropriate modifications and effective communication to both. And DCS has also been ordered to adopt and publish grievance procedures to resolve complaints against the agency for violating federal law, as well as to pay unspecified compensatory damage to those who have complained for their injuries caused by the agency's violations of the law. The clock is running. In a letter to Lujan, who runs the agency here in Arizona, Rebecca Bond, who is the chief of Disability Rights section of the Department of Justice, told him that he should contact our agency within 2 weeks if Arizona is interested in working with the department to reach a solution. Otherwise, legal action a lawsuit would be forthcoming. This is a quote, "We hope to collaborate with Arizona and agree on changes the state will make to remedy the violations. We must inform you," the DOJ said, "that if Arizona will not negotiate or if our negotiations fail, the United States may take appropriate action, including initiating a lawsuit to remedy Arizona's ADA violations." In a prepared response, DCS said it is reviewing the findings of what it said was nearly five-year-long investigation and will work with the DOJ to remedy any alleged violations of the law. The letter to Lujan details some specific examples of where the DOJ says the agency denies parents with disabilities an equal chance to show that they can safely parent. One case involves a father of two children who became involved with DCS when the child's mother died, shortly after giving birth to their younger child, who was born early. According to DOJ, the state knew from the start the father, who lived independently, had a learning disability. The agency removed the younger child amid concerns that the father was not feeding the baby properly. And while the agency did not identify safety concerns for the older child in the family, it removed that child as well, based solely on the father's disability. And DCS speculated the father had developmental delays. And DCS subsequently returned the older child with no issues. But the Department of Justice said the removal was traumatic for both child and father because it happened shortly after the mother's death. The case of the younger child lasted several years, the DOJ said, with DCS focused on the father's cognitive limitations and his adaptability. DCS employees made many decisions based on assumptions and stereotypes about the father's disability, according to the letter from DOJ. They also did not consistently provide the father with the reasonable modifications he asked for or obviously needed, such as written summaries and oral explanations of the child's medical appointments or parenting classes or other services tailored for a parent with a learning disability. DCS gave the father no services to help him build skills to raise a child with medical needs, the DOJ said. After 3 years, the father gave up his parental rights to his younger child. The report cites other instances, including DCS removing a newborn baby from a couple at the hospital based on generalized concerns that the mother's autism and ADHD made her an unsafe parent, something DOJ said occurred based solely on her disability, with no actions or incidents the agency could identify as the basis for their concerns. The report also cites an incident where requiring a mother with traumatic brain injury to go for a neuropsychological evaluation based only on her history of traumatic brain injury without identifying any specific concerns on how that was affecting her parenting, a move DOJ said likely prolonged her separation from her children. Also, DCS refusal to remove or provide even partially unsupervised visits to a couple, both with intellectual and developmental disabilities, even though they might be able to parent as a team with occasional help from their support system. And the DCS required multiple psychological evaluations based on stereotypes and generalizations about parents with disabilities. And there was something else. The report said some DCS employees used derogatory and outdated terms to refer to parents with disabilities. For example, employees heard coworkers and supervisors call parents with mental health disabilities crazy, loony, or psycho. One DCS supervisor described a parent's learning disability as a mental retardation, even though that term is outdated and an inaccurate description of a learning disability. And that story titled, or headlined more accurately, State Department of Child Safety in violation of federal law, according to the Department of Justice. Well, up next, a vision for community, creating Prescott Valley's downtown. The story says, once referred to as Jackass Flats, downtown Prescott Valley truly began to take shape in the 1960s when Bill Fain recognized the need for a central hub where families could live, work, and play. Fane Signature Group purchased a square mile of grazing land with a vision to create a walkable urban core filled with dining, shopping, and entertainment options. In 1988, Fane's foresight began to materialize when Safeway moved to the area, creating the Safeway Center, a modern retail anchor for the budding downtown. By the 1990s, Fane's group donated land to establish a civic center campus, home to the town's offices, public library, police, and fire departments. The late 1990s brought the construction of Glassford Hill Road, enhancing connectivity and paving the way for the Glassford Hill Marketplace. This regional shopping center, anchored by Kohl's and Walmart, added popular retail and dining destinations that drew residents and visitors alike. The Findlay Toyota Center, a $35 million multi-purpose facility completed in 2006, further enriched the downtown area, offering a venue for sports, concerts, and community events. As Central Arizona's only indoor event arena, holding as many as 6,000 attendees, Prescott Valley's Findlay Toyota Center now hosts leading entertainment acts such as Justin Moore, Joe Coy, and Professional Bull Riders Rodeo. This long-term vision of Bill Fane paid off in spades, according to Shane Caldwell, who's the general manager of the Toyota Center. He says today, similar arenas to the Findlay cost upwards of $80 million or $100 million to build. Again, the Findlay Toyota Center cost $35 million back in 2006. The Rafter 11 Ranch Town Center soon followed, aptly named after the Fane's cattle ranch, Rafter 11. The Fane's Fane's Town Center design introduced a pedestrian-friendly district with theaters, restaurants, parks, and mixed-use communities. And in 2017, the addition of Homestead Apartments, a 214-unit apartment complex, completed the live-work-play vision. Today, Rafter 11 Town Center is home to 26 businesses, including retail, restaurants, entertainment, professional services, and healthcare. Over six decades, Fane's group has donated more than 200 acres for public and educational use, benefiting institutions such as Dignity Health, Yavapai College, and the YMCA. Today, Prescott Valley embodies Bill Fane's dream of a thriving urban downtown with rural charm, a vision that continues to evolve and improve with time. And that headline, A Vision for Community, Creating Prescott Valley's Downtown. Yeah, the Chino Valley Council buys the Fred Harvey buildings at Del Rio Springs. We see a photograph of it. Looks like an abandoned building, pretty small, a single story in this photograph. The caption says, the milk barn on the Fred Harvey farm is one of the buildings the town council is planning to rehabilitate after acquiring 23 acres of the historic property at a meeting earlier this month. The story says the Chino Valley Town Council voted 6-1 to approve purchasing 23 acres with four historic Fred Harvey buildings at Del Rio Springs for just over $345,000, including using $60,000 from the general fund that was not initially budgeted. Chino Valley Councilman John McCafferty cast the lone dissenting vote. McCafferty said he was for the project but didn't like the extra $60,000. He said the town is soon going to face a budget crunch and that the priorities need to be fixing roads and water infrastructure. Chino Valley Town Manager Terry Denemy gave a presentation about the purchase, including that if the $60,000 were spent on roads, that it would rebuild 0.04 mile or seal code about 1.25 mile. Six of the other six council members did not see the benefit of that trade-off, but Cafferty said he would take whatever he could for road repair. Chino Valley Economic Director Maggie Holgram was scheduled to give the presentation, but Denemy took over. It says here, the four buildings that will be purchased are a dairy barn, a milk barn, a bunkhouse, and mule barn Denamy said the purchase will preserve a piece of history forever.
Fred Harvey Hotels and restaurants are a major part of the U.S. Railroad history and establishment of tourist destinations in the West. It was also the first restaurant chain in the country. These are the only remaining buildings associated with a Fred Harvey farm in the country. The Harvey Farm in Chino provided eggs, poultry, milk, ice, and other produce for hotels from Santa Fe to Los Angeles. Yeah, the Chino Valley Council buys Fred Harvey buildings at Del Rio Springs. And you're listening to the Prescott Daily Courier on Sunsounds of Arizona. Sunsounds has been providing information access since 1979. We invite you to live stream at sunsounds.org. Which brings us to Town Council of Prescott Valley to discuss next steps for a new YMCA. And the story comes with a, looks like an artist's rendering of what the new facility would look like. We see a two-level building, a lot longer than it is tall, and a lot of glass, especially on the top floor. In fact, the entire top floor is basically windows and kind of a modified entry point there that slopes upward the way this rendering looks. And the story says continued discussion of bringing a new YMCA to Prescott Valley will take place at the January 9th Town Council meeting. The next steps of this project will be addressed. Town Council meetings take place on the first floor of the Prescott Valley Library on Skoog Boulevard. And Damon Olson, CEO of the James Family Prescott YMCA, encourages the public to attend the meeting and to show support for what he views as an essential project. The proposal states that the town will construct and own the facility, and the Prescott Valley Community Center will operate it, and the cost of the town for constructing the facility will not exceed $29 million, which does not include the off-site improvements. The biggest and most popular amenity to the Y would be a swimming pool, which is a big draw to the YMCA location in Prescott, and a pool was always part of the plan for the new location. The location for the new proposed YMCA will be 5 acres of donated land by the Fain family, situated south of Bob Edwards Park, which is centrally located near the Library and Civic Center, as well as Glassford Hill Middle School, Bradshaw Mountain High, and Yavapai College, all of which offers numerous positive prospects. Prescott Valley Town Council to discuss the next steps for a proposed new YMCA. Well, up next, event promoters, hotels, and lodging sites soon will have to disclose extra fees up front. The Federal Trade Commission this week said it will soon require hotels, vacation rental platforms, and live event promoters to disclose any fees up front when they list prices. The FTC said consumers often see advertised prices for hotel rooms and short-term rentals and tickets to sporting events and concerts, only to be surprised later by so-called junk fees, including resort fees, cleaning fees, processing fees, and other extra charges. People deserve to know up front what they're being asked to pay without worrying that they'll later be saddled with mysterious fees that they haven't budgeted for and cannot avoid, according to FTC Chair Lena Chan. The rule is scheduled to go into effect in 120 days. Ticketmaster said Tuesday it supports the new rule. Ticketmaster has long advocated for all-in pricing as a nationwide industry standard, and Ticketmaster saying they're pleased to see the FTC mandate the necessary changes to make ticket buying more transparent for fans. Although some question whether they're so excited about it, why they would have to do it, why they didn't do it on their own before it being legislated. The rule requires lodging and ticketing businesses to clearly disclose the true cost, including all mandatory fees, when they display any pricing. Businesses that exclude taxes or shipping fees from advertised prices must also disclose them before customers enter any payment information. Junk fees and deceptive pricing are also one of the reasons the Department of Justice sued Ticketmaster and its parent company, Live Nation. Earlier this year, the government asked a court to separate the companies, saying they have a monopoly on concert promotion and ticketing that drives up prices for consumers. The Biden administration also has targeted the fee practices of U.S. airlines, banks, and online payment platforms who have similar hidden fees. Event promoters, hotels, and lodging sites soon will have to disclose extra fees up front. Well, this next story is headlined, Prescott City Contribution to Pure Imagination Festival Reduced Significantly from Original Request. The story says a local music festival that sought financial assistance from the city of Prescott earlier this year will receive considerably less than the original ask, which was $75,000 a year. The council voted to award $7,600 to the Pure Imagination Festival for the coming year. That amount, which is in addition to the $3,800 that has already been awarded to the festival, significantly reduced from the $75,000 per year for 3 years that was initially proposed by the festival founder Candace Divine Sheridan in September of this year. When Divine Sheridan made her presentation to the council, she said the festival that takes place at the city's Watson Lake has brought about $2.25 million of financial impact into the community over the past 3 years to help cover the rising costs for bringing in performers and stages. She asked for $75,000 from the city for each of the next 3 years, as well as a waiver of city fees for the use of Watson Lake. The Pure Imagination Festival takes place in May, and its recent lineups have included performers such as Ziggy Marley, Michael Franti and Spearhead, and Tanya Tucker. Divine Sheridan told the council in September that while the Watson Lake venue is considered one of the most magnificent backdrops for a music festival, she said, I have to bring in all the infrastructure, water and power. So, she said, that is the only downside is that this event is very expensive to produce. And that headline, City Contribution to Pure Imagination Festival, reduced significantly from its original request. Well, up next, the Arizona Game and Fish Department will conduct winter wildlife surveys. Story comes with a photograph. We see a couple of deer running majestically through an open field. Pretty much a close-up photograph of the two deer running together. Very beautiful. And the story says Game and Fish will be conducting its aerial winter wildlife surveys for deer and javelina scheduled through January. The department routinely conducts big game surveys with aircraft in Arizona's game management units, as they are called. These flights are an important tool used by wildlife managers to accurately set annual hunt permit numbers to ensure the health of big game populations. While Game and Fish attempts to minimize the flights during hunting seasons, hunters are advised that some surveys may overlap with an ongoing hunt. This time of year, the head counts are done on deer and javelina. Surveys are conducted all over Arizona, with individuals from Game and Fish being broken up into management units to conduct surveys every other year in an effort to allow more time to focus on each unit, followed by comparisons on each unit as well. And a spokesman says the information will provide an overall view for the state. And the majority of the surveys are conducted aerially. Biologists fly over the area in a fixed-wing aircraft or helicopter, depending upon the terrain. Information on the deer that's collected sheds light on how many young ones exist as deer give birth during the summer months. And by this time of year, surveyors would be able to tell the difference between bucks and does, which is predominantly gauged by size. Breeding season takes place in winter, at which time deer usually travel in herds, with an average of 6 to 12 deer in each herd. As for the javelina, they also travel in herds most of the year, not just during the winter time. An average herd size ranges from 7 to 10. Game and Fish likes to see a healthy, growing, sustaining population of javelina, as anything less could be concerning, as with deer, too. If we see lower population, a spokesman says, we would then recommend our department to decrease the number of hunter permits. In some cases, having fewer water sources to mingle leads wildlife to gather at the same locations. heightening the risk of them attacking each other as they fend for water, as well as spreading disease. Additionally, wildlife may seek out water in locations that aren't safe for them, such as urban and agricultural areas. And that headline, Game and Fish to conduct winter wildlife surveys through next month. And we'll close with this story from the world of sports. Dick Van Arsdale, former Phoenix Suns guard, dies at the age of 81. See a photograph of Van Arsdale guarding another player with a New York Knicks uniform on. Caption says it's Dick Barnett that he's guarding there, but we see Van Arsdale wearing the number 5. Story says Dick Van Arsdale, a 3-time All-Star who became the first Suns player after being selected by the franchise in the 1968 expansion draft, has died at the age of 81. The Suns announced Van Arsdale's death in a statement, and a team spokesman confirmed that the franchise had received the news from his family. The 6'5" Van Arsdale played his first 3 NBA seasons with the New York Knicks before being selected by the Suns with their first pick in the expansion draft. He's an All-Star during his first 3 seasons, averaging a career-high 22 points a game during the 1970-71 season. Van Arsdale was part of the franchise's 1976 team that advanced to the NBA Finals before losing to the Boston Celtics, and then he retired in 1977. After his playing days, Dick Van Arsdale held several positions with the Suns, including a broadcaster and front office executive. Dick Van Arsdale died. He was 81. You've been listening to the Prescott Daily Courier, a production of Sun Sounds of Arizona in Flagstaff. I'm Terry Ward. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, this is a Christmas song I wrote. I thought I'd sing it for you. I hope you like it.
One day, I'm gonna say my last Merry Christmas. Don't be afraid. I heard out in space there are many Christmases among the stars. When I'm gonna take my ship to the planet of Boopity-Bip. They've got Christmas there with nobody hungry. They all get unlimited breadsticks. Drive my ship to Dip-Buddy-Dare. Their Christmas has affordable healthcare. All their pulpits talk about how Jesus held power accountable. I'll have an alien Christmas. Jesus rose across the zodiac, and they actually did what he said. Give me an alien Christmas. When I die, I'm gonna fly to all the planets that do Christmas right. I'll send an alien Christmas to you. I'll send an alien Christmas to you. Out there I know people feel low, but they're trying to smile for Christmas time. I feel it too. Some place it's true, they've got a perfect Christmas for every soul. When I'm gone, I'll take a warp drive to the planet of geek buddies. I they do Christmas with no...